30th, 2014, in Ljubljana, Slovenia. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life, text 43. Patim paramadharma gyam vaidharbi malaya dvayam premna parya charadvitva bhogansa pati devata. Ladies? Do we have any arrangement for translation? Yes, taking care of? Okay. Patim, her husband. Padama, supreme. Dharmagyam, knower of religious principles. Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vidarbha. Malayadvajam, name Malayadvaja. Premna, with love and affection. Paryacharat, served in devotion. Hitva, giving up. Bhogan, sense enjoyments. Sa, she. Patidevata, accepting her husband as the Supreme Lord. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband all in all as the Supreme. She gave up sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband who was so advanced. Thus, she remained engaged in his service. Purport. Figuratively, King Malayadvaja is the spiritual master and his wife, Vaidarbhi, is the disciple. The disciple accepts the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in Guru Vastaka, Shakshadaritvena. One directly accepts the Guru, the spiritual master, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should accept the spiritual master not in the sense that the Mayavadi philosophers do, but in the way recommended here. Since the spiritual master is the most confidential servant of the Lord, he should be treated exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master should never be neglected or disobeyed like an ordinary person. If a woman is fortunate enough to be the wife of a pure devotee, she can serve her husband without any desire for sense gratification. If she remains engaged in the service of her exalted husband, she will automatically attain the spiritual perfections of her husband. If a disciple gets a bona fide spiritual master, simply by satisfying him, he can attain a similar opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Patim param dharmagyam vaidarbi malayadvajam premna parya charadvitva bhogansa patidevata. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband all in all as the Supreme. She gave up all sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband who was so advanced. Thus she remained engaged in his service. So this verse very nicely summarizes and encapsulizes what is the system of bhakti yoga. So the system of bhakti yoga is to serve with love, premna paryacharat. So to do service with devotion and hitva bhogan, to give up sense gratification. This is basically the essence. If we take Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti, anya bilasita sunyam, jnana karma anavritam, anukulena krishna anushilanam, bhaktir uttamam, it's very similar. Prema parya charad vitva bhogan. So you give up all material, all personal material desires, and you serve favorably. Right? The most important concept in the definition of bhakti that Rupa Goswami gives is favorably, that one should do service favorably with devotion. And this is really the whole key. If we want to understand how it is that we are going to approach the supreme destination, one does service with love and with giving up one's personal sense gratification. And that's it. Like Prabhupada said, simple for the simple. It's very, very simple. And not only do we serve the Lord like that, but we also serve the Guru like that. So this is an allegorical story, the story of King Puranjana. This is not a factual historical narrative, but it is still communicating truth. Sometimes we think that truth has to be nonfiction and fiction is untrue. But here's a fictional story that is true. So in this fictional story, the king, Malayadvaja, is the guru, and his wife, Vaidarbhi, is the disciple. And this, of course, is in their vanaprastha stage, which will be explained much more in the next verse and purport, particularly what is the duty of the wife in the vanaprastha stage, the vanaprastha woman. So this, because they're in the vanaprastha stage, their living is very austere. The guru and the disciple are both living very, very austerely. And therefore here giving up sense enjoyment is quite literal on all platforms. In other words, they're only eating fruits and roots in the forest and they're just wearing their own clothes. They're not combing their hair. Of course, in our situation, being in a city, this would not be appropriate. So the details of how she's giving up sense gratification are not applicable to us in Ljubljana. If all the brahmacharinis started wearing matted hair, you know, and old clothing, and if our Sunday feast we just serve fruits and roots, you know, uncooked fruits and roots, so that would not be very favorable for service. So the details may be somewhat different in this particular fictional story and in our lives, but the principle is the same. The principle is the same. So let's look at each one of these separately. So let's look at prema, paryacharad, and dvitva bhogan. So prema is with love. So what does it mean to have love? What does that mean? We'll look at each of these for Krishna, for guru, and for devotees. So we know that the second class devotee, the Madhyam Bhakta, it said that he has prema for the Supreme Lord and friendship with the devotees. So it's interesting, prema is defined in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by quoting Bhishma as when all of your feelings of kinship are reposed in one person, that it's not divided. Now, we have some sense of that in the modern concept of monogamy. And by the way, that's a relatively modern concept that marriage means monogamy, although Lord Ramachandra took such a vow. But this idea that it's only you, that there's nobody else, there's no second, is a very famous song by Mirabai like that. that, my Lord, you are my only husband, you are my only worshipful one, and there's nobody else. And this, we understand this, some idea of this in terms of love, that I don't have some second, my love's not divided. We have this idea in terms of, say, loyalty to one's country. You know, that if it's one of the crimes in the world that still in many countries is punishable by death, that if you say, you know, you're devoted to your country, but you're also serving the enemies of your country. So that's a very one of the most serious crimes, that you have divided loyalties. And Jesus talked about this too. He said, you cannot serve God and the world. You cannot serve two opposite masters. You can only have one master. So this is one idea of love, that you are my only. And my only what? My only shelter. And this is a very important concept for those of us on the path of bhakti. I was speaking to one devotee some time ago who was saying, you know, when my wife and I started a business, I said to her, you know, a business is risky. It can fail at any time. Don't count on this business being successful. And she said, oh, yes, my dear husband, I understand that. And whether the business is successful or a failure, I will always stand by you. There's no problem, even if we are poor. And then when the business failed, instead of standing by him, she blamed him. Oh, it is your fault the business failed. You are a terrible person. I don't want anything to do with you anymore. Now that this business has failed. And he was so angry at his wife. Oh, she has cheated me. She's not what she said she was. And I said to this devotee, you were thinking your wife was your shelter. You're thinking, this is somebody I can count on in all circumstances. So love means only Krishna is my shelter. My wife is not my shelter. My husband is not my shelter. My children are not my shelter. Nothing is my shelter. Only Krishna. That I depend completely on Krishna. And I invest all of my sources of happiness and satisfaction in Krishna. So this is nicely explained with Dhruva Maharaj. When he saw Lord Vishnu, he said, now I'm completely filled up. I don't need anything from any other source. And we see this with the residents of Vrindavan when they go to find Krishna in the coils of Kaliya. And it said they invested everything in Krishna. Just like sometimes people, they make some big investment in a company in the stock market, and when the company fails, they become depressed. Even sometimes they commit suicide. So the residents of Vrindavan, when they saw Krishna in the lake of Kaliya, they were ready to go into the lake also. That if Krishna's gone, we have nothing else. Sunyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahanime. That without you, life is vacant. And we have, you know, there's some reflection of that in this world. I remember a song when I was a teenager, My World is Empty Without You. It was some song like that. But, of course, in this world with another jiva, that is not the case. But with Krishna, real love, it should be like that. Without you, Krishna, there's nothing. You know, oh, Krishna's gone. Oh, that's okay. I have my TV show. Or that's okay. I have my dog. I have my chocolate bar. You know, I have my career, whatever. And you see sometimes people come to the Krishna consciousness movement and then they leave and they say, oh, I don't have Krishna anymore, but I have my football games, I have my chocolate bar, I have my dog. So it's okay. But real love is only Krishna will satisfy me. I'm not going to go any other place for satisfaction, like that bird, what that bird is called, that only drinks the water from the cloud. What is that bird called? Chakora, the Chakora bird. Must be a very... I don't see how that bird could live in India because it only rains once a year. So you can't go without water all year. So I don't know how that bird actually functions. But this Chakora bird, it would have to live in some very rainy place, huh? Like where we are in Hawaii where it rains all the time, or London or Belgium or something like that. So the Chakora bird, it only drinks water from the cloud. It doesn't drink water from a puddle. It doesn't drink water from a river. Only the cloud. So this is also love. So you're my only shelter and you're my only source of happiness. I don't get happiness someplace else. I don't go elsewhere for my satisfaction. And love is also that I see the good qualities in you. Like we hear about Lord Shiva, he's called Asutosh. So he very easily sees someone's good qualities and very easily sees someone's faults also. Very, very quickly. He'll see your good qualities, if you have a small good quality, but also very, very quickly see your faults. So love, you don't actually see the faults in someone. Or even you see the faults as good qualities. You even see the faults as good qualities. So there was some, I had some discussion with a devotee some time ago about some lady that was staying in the Brahmacharini ashram, and I know her quite well. And this authority was appealing to me, you please help me with this Brahmacharini. I'm having some difficulty with her because she's going out when it's dark to go to the, what do you call it? Like the, we call it a gymnasium, but I don't know if you call it like that. Where you like work out, where you swim and you do exercises. Do you call that a gymnasium? Huh? Telo Vadnisa? Okay, so she was going to the Telo Vadnisa, is that right? And she was going when it was dark to go swimming, to get some exercise. And so the temple president appealed to me and he said, this is very dangerous for her, we're very afraid, she's going to get raped, she's going to get killed, something terrible is going to happen. But she won't listen to anybody. She says, no, I have to go swimming in the dark. And I, as I say, I knew this person very well, and I knew this person had had some very difficult things happen to them. This person actually had, this lady actually had been attacked several times in other circumstances and some very serious accidents. And I said, you know, what's very nice about this woman is she has a lot of courage. That even though she's been a crime victim and even though she's been an accident victim several times, still she's willing to go in a dangerous circumstance to get her exercise. And then I wrote to her and I said, you should follow the temple president and not go out in the dark. But my point is that I said, the temple president looked at her going out at night and said, this is a very bad quality. You understand? And I looked at it and I said, well, no, actually it's a very good quality. That after so many problems in her life, she could just be staying home with the doors closed, you know, shaking in fear. And instead, she's going out and having courage. So this is love. Love is you see even someone's bad qualities as good qualities. Just like the prayer saying, Krishna, even if you ignore me, even if you trample me, even you're a lumpataha, you're a debauchee, still I love you. Still I love you. So that is the mood of the devotees. You know, they don't, well, sometimes they say, oh, Krishna, you've left us, we're not going to think about you anymore. but they're always loving him. They don't stop loving him. So that is also love. And then love is not only are you my shelter, but I am going to be there for you also. So this is the principle of bhakti. Called Sakya, not Sakya Rasa like the cowherd boys, but of the nine processes, the Sakya is that Krishna, I am also going to be there for you. You are my shelter. I can count on you to take care of me. And also you can count on me. I'm not going to leave. One devotee recently sent me a video about the harm to children of divorce. And in this video, it was making the point that two-thirds of the time when people divorce, it's not because there's some abuse or some criminality, but just one person is not happy. One person just says, well, I just decided I don't really like this person anymore. They're not my, you know, my ideal person. And this is one of the main complaints I get when everywhere I go in the world. It's one of the top, like, three complaints that I get. I think I married the wrong person. You know, I don't. My wife is not the perfect wife. My husband is not the perfect husband. I just don't feel fully satisfied in this relationship. And so I will leave. And I will find somebody else. Of course, they find someone else, and they find that person is also not the perfect person. So this is also love. I will not leave. That Krishna, even if you trample me by your embrace, even if you tell me to worship Indra, and the result of that is a huge flood, you know, the residents of Vrindavan, they don't say, okay, Krishna, we listen to you, and now there's a flood, so now goodbye. We're not going to listen to you anymore. We do this in this world, right? We have some friend, and they give us advice, and then we leave. So this is love. So that is love for Krishna, but what about love for Guru? Because one of the main points in this verse is that here the disciple is doing prema, prayachara, dvitva, bhogan, for, and not directly for Krishna. Not directly for Krishna, although the disciple will see Krishna directly. As the story progresses and the Guru leaves the planet, then Krishna will directly come in the form of a brahmana. I am your old friend. But here the disciple is doing this for the Guru. So is this exactly the same for the Guru as for Krishna? Well, as Prabhupada is saying here in the purport, yes and no. Sakshat Hari Tvena Samas. Sakshat Hari, Hari is directly Hari. The Guru is directly Hari. But it's not Sakshat Hari, it's Sakshat Hari Tvena. Because we do not accept the Guru is Hari, as Prabhupada says here, like the Mayavadis. And we see that this is a mistake that devotees make. So Prabhupada here is talking about one kind of mistake where one just says, oh, the Guru is an ordinary person. And therefore, I don't have to obey the Guru. I can obey this order, but I don't have to obey that order. That is the half a hen philosophy, right? I'll just obey the orders that I want to obey. I'll obey the orders to eat prasadam, but I won't obey the orders to chant 16 rounds. I like that. But I see devotees also sometimes make mistakes on the other side where they think the Guru is actually God. Of course, no devotee in the Hare Krishna movement will say, yes, my Guru is God. My Guru is Krishna. But emotionally, they may try to deal with the Guru as if the Guru is God. Just like we were saying that the prema for the Lord is you repose all of one's feeling of kinship in the Lord. Janaka janani daita tanai prabhu guru patituhu sarvamoy. You are everything to me. So we do not do that with the Guru. We do not go to the Guru and say, my dear Guru, you are my mother, you are my father, you are my husband, you are my lover, you are my son, you are my brother, you are everything to me. That would be very inappropriate. And the Guru would run away. You know, I'm sorry, I cannot be everything for you. I was at a class in Ujjain many years ago where Bhakti Chiruswami was talking about this point. And he was saying, the Guru is not a close, intimate friend like a buddy. You understand the English word buddy? You know, like a buddy is like a friend you just joke around with. Like Arjuna, when he was talking to Krishna in the 11th chapter, and he said, we were sitting on the same bed, you know, and we're just joking around. And I'm saying, oh, Yadava, because the descendants of Yadu, they cannot rule. But Arjuna, as the Kuru, he was ruling. So, oh, you're a Yadava. I'm a Kuru, and you're just a Yadava. Oh, Yadava. So we were joking like that. So the Guru is not supposed to be a friend like that. Not some buddy that you just joke around with. Hey, Guruji, you know, how you doing today? Hey, buddy. You know? So not like that. And certainly you don't see the Guru just like one has some rasa with Krishna. We all have our ultimate rasa with Krishna. Krishna may be our child or our lover, but the Guru is not like that. It's not that if my eternal rasa is in Vatsalya ras and I see Krishna as my little child, that then I'm going to see my Guru like that also. You know, this is absurd. Or if my eternal rasa is Madhurya rasa and I see Krishna as my lover, I'm not going to see my Guru as like that. But we should be very careful that we don't try to think that our Guru is the source of all of our emotional needs. It's not like that. It's not that because the Guru is Sakshat Hari Tvena that our love for Krishna is going to be exactly the same as for Guru. Okay, my dear Guru, you're going to fulfill everything. I'm not going to go any place except to you for all of my needs. I really like how Srila Prabhupada explains this. He says that Krishna is the supreme friend, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. But the Guru never says, I am the supreme friend. The Guru says, Krishna is your supreme friend. And therefore the Guru becomes also your supreme friend. So, like that. Like that. Or we give the example that when the police officer stops you on the road, the police officer is given the respect that you give to the whole government, isn't it? The police officer there, one police officer, is representing the whole government. Isn't that a fact? Right? You show the officer special respect, more than you show to just some ordinary citizen. And I know, at least in America, if somebody murders a police officer, it's a much more serious crime than if you murder some ordinary citizen. Just an ordinary police officer, not some big government official. We're not talking about, you know, the president, the prime minister, the secretary of the treasury. Some police officer just going and giving out tickets for driving too fast on the road. You know, a peon in the government. But still, if you do some harm to that police officer, it's very serious. You know, if you go to some ordinary guy on the street and you say, you're a fool, you're an idiot. That's not some big crime. But if the police officer stops you and you say, you fool, you idiot, they can arrest you, yes? Right? Because the police officer represents the whole government. Or also Prabhupada gives the example of the ambassador. The ambassador comes from the country. So one treats the guru like that, as the representative of God. And whatever, just like when the ambassador comes, you give the ambassador all the gifts that are for the prime minister, that are for the president. And the ambassador gives those gifts to the president. You can pay your fine to the judge in the court. You don't go to the president's palace and you pay your traffic fine. Right? You go to the local courthouse, whatever you have in this country. You know, you go to some local government place, and you pay your fine there. And that is the same as paying your fine to the whole government. So the guru is like that, but it is not simply that the guru is a representative. One also has great love for the guru. This is very nicely explained in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, that one should serve the guru with love. So what is this love? If we had love for Krishna, how do we have love for guru? We said Krishna is the only object of love. You have love for only Krishna and for no one else. Huh? But as soon as you say only Krishna, then that applies again to everyone. This is the great mystery. If we try to love everybody separately, we really love nobody but ourselves. But when we love Krishna only, then immediately we love everybody, because everybody is connected with Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example, when you get married, then you immediately have the whole family of your spouse. And before the marriage, your spouse's family is not your family. And as soon as there's the wedding, immediately, your wife's mother is your mother-in-law, your wife's sister is your sister-in-law, your husband's father is your father-in-law. And you're immediately connected. And it's very difficult. Sometimes you see in a family, I see this particularly in Indian families, but sometimes you see in a family, the person says, well, I love my mother, but I love my husband, but I don't like my mother-in-law. It's very common. But that is a great disturbance. Right? My dear husband, I love you, but I hate your mother. And it causes a big problem in the family. So if you love Krishna, then you certainly love his messenger. You love the person who's giving you to Krishna. One serves the guru with a great vow of love. There should be a great bond of affection between the guru and the disciple, such that also that the disciple is willing to follow the orders of the guru, even if very difficult, and even if they don't always turn out right. I remember one devotee, she was saying, I'm renouncing my guru because my guru told me to go to India, and I just got sick there, and nothing worked out, and I lost all my money, and so my guru is useless. I'm not having anything to do with him anymore. But no, the disciple follows the orders of guru, even if there's some difficulty. And then the devotees, how do we love the devotees? So without loving the devotees, it is not possible to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. This is simply impossible. I mean, you can take a few steps, very few steps as a neophyte devotee. But you cannot come to the second platform, what to speak of the highest platform of bhakti, if we're mistreating the devotees. In fact, if we mistreat any living entities. This is the recurring theme in the Shastra, that one loves God and one has also this love overflows and pours to all living entities. What to speak of the devotees. In fact, in the higher stages of bhakti, in Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, the essence of this, of Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, is one becomes attached to a specific devotee in Vrindavan, in a particular mood in Vrindavan. So there's no question. And we may say, well, but the devotees have so many faults. Well, that may be. Of course, Oh, if one is honest, one will see that they also have so many faults that the other devotees have to tolerate. So I may think, well, my faults are not important, so everybody can love me, but everyone else's faults are very important, so I cannot love them. This is very typically how the conditioned soul thinks. So again, we don't love the devotees. We don't love another jiva as our full shelter and everything the way we love Krishna. That is, we're not trying to love them like that. The way we're loving the other devotees is we already have all of our needs met by Krishna. All of our relationships are taken care of by Krishna. So I don't have to get anything from the other devotees. The problems we have with the other devotees is we feel that we need to get something from them. They disappoint us when we do not get from them what we think they should give us. But if I'm getting everything from Krishna, then I don't need to get from the other devotees, and I can simply give. I can simply give. And however, whatever faults they have, whatever failings they have, it doesn't matter because I'm getting everything from Krishna. So the next point, Paryacharad, that one does service. So this love is not simply an emotion. This love is expressed in action. This love for Krishna, this love for the guru, this love for the devotees, it is expressed in action. It's not just, oh, I love. You know, many, many, many years ago, well, we must be like 39, 40 years ago, I was at the Boston Temple at the Sunday feast. This one woman came. I was talking to her and she said, well, I don't need Krishna consciousness because I'm a disciple of Jesus. And I said, well, that's lovely that you're a disciple of Jesus. I said, so suppose you didn't tell me that. Suppose I didn't know and I just examined your life. How could I tell in your life that you're a disciple of Jesus? And she said, you could not tell. It's all in my heart. So that is not love. We all understand that is not love. I remember many years ago, I had one friend who said, Urmila, anytime you need something, you just call me. And so one time I was very sick and my car was broken and I called her and I said, can you please drive me to the doctor? And she said, no, I have some sewing to do. You know, it's sewing. I have some busy with some sewing. So that's not love. That's not love. Love is exemplified in action. I mean, even Paul says this in the Bible. Faith without works is dead. If you say, Krishna is my shelter, Krishna is my everything, I am there for you, Krishna, I just see the good, then you will do something for Krishna. This was explained nicely in the previous verse. We'll actually act for Krishna's pleasure. And if I'm really devoted to the guru, one will act for the guru. You know, I often find on Prabhupada's Vyas Puja Day, sometimes it's a little difficult. These devotees who only come on that day, you know, you never see them. They never do anything. And they just come on that day and then they say, oh, Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada. It's like, where are you the other 364 days a year? What are you doing? I was once listening to a conversation between two of my godbrothers and one of them said, oh, yes, yes, my heart is at Mangalarti. And the other godbrother says, why don't you bring the rest of your body? So, there should be some action. There should be some action. I was just reading the Vyas Puja offering by Bir Krishna Swami, and he was saying, we should always be thinking, when I'm just making a decision, this decision, that decision, which would be more pleasing to Srila Prabhupada? What would please Srila Prabhupada? What would please my spiritual master? How can I please my spiritual master's mission? And with the devotees too, we should have some action. There should be some action. Not that I try to go to the front of the prasadam line and pick out all the paneer for myself. You know? There should be some service for the devotees. And not just, I mean, glorification is very nice, but again, not just, oh, you're such a nice devotee, you're such a nice devotee. And of course, if we're fortunate enough, like in this verse, Vaidarbhi is fortunate enough that her husband is a great devotee, her husband is her guru. So if we're fortunate enough that the devotees are our family members, then we can also We get double, you know, instead of just our normal family service, we also get the benefit of serving a devotee. And that is a very great benediction. Okay, then the last one, dvitva bhogan. So giving up bhogan, giving up sense enjoyment. Now again, this particular story at this particular time is in the forest in the Vanaprastha ashram. So we have to understand this dvitva bhogan in context. So Vaidarbhi was literally giving up anything that had to do with material luxury, you know, to live out in the forest and to just gather food from the forest and not comb your hair and wear old clothes. And even they were not speaking. So this is, as Krishna says to Rukmini, one of the pleasures in the Grihastha ashram is the nice talks and joking between the husband and the wife. But they didn't even have this anymore. So Malaya Dwaj was in Samadhi and Vaidarbhi was simply doing some service. There was no conversation. There was certainly no sexual enjoyment like as would there be there between husband and wife. So there was really nothing. I mean, in this particular circumstance, there was really nothing of material comforts whatsoever. So that doesn't mean that necessarily all of us should have absolutely no material comforts. That is not what Srila Prabhupada gave us. Prabhupada didn't say to us, like the Christian monks who eat only unsalted soup and unsalted bread, you know, and that's all they eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and they never talk to each other. You know, there are some monks like this, yes? They never speak. They just go in their own little rooms, and maybe once a week for an hour, they go out of the monastery and they play some game. So this is not the life that Srila Prabhupada gave us. Keval Anandakanda. He gave us a life with a lot of sensory input. Like I know my father, when he first visited a temple, he looked at the altar and he said, are those all real flowers? Having so many real flowers, I mean, for the normal people in Ljubljana, I'm sure only the very wealthy people have so many real flowers every day, isn't it? The average person, do they have all these real flowers every day in their house? I don't think so. Probably not. And the food that we eat, right? The prasadam that we're having, again, it is like the very rich person. In modern society, the average person, they're just going to the restaurant, the shop, and they're buying already prepared food, isn't it? Yes? So my youngest son, for many years, ran a prasadam business where they would make bars, like fruit and nut bars, that they sold in the shops. And he said, Mata, there's food in the shops at least 6 months old. I said, all the, you know, not like the fresh apples, but all the prepared food is 6 to 12 months old. Right? And then people will sometimes, they take the bread from McDonald's and they leave it for a month and it doesn't rot. Because there's... So this is the food most people are eating. So we're eating very nice food, isn't it? All fresh fruits and vegetables and grains and cooked with love and devotion and offered to Krishna very nice food. And I see all of us, we're wearing very nice clothes. Our clothes are made of like wool and silk and cotton. We're not just wearing old torn clothes. And we usually have these, those of us who live in a temple, we have these beautiful buildings to live in. Sometimes we forget because we're there every day. You know, what a very beautiful place. Because we're servants in the king's palace. So we are also living in the king's palace. So what does this mean then, dvitva bhogan? What does this mean? And of course, those who are in the grihastha ashram, they can have some furniture and so many things. It's not that those in the grihastha ashram, the husband and wife, can never talk. No, we cannot talk because that is all sense gratification. But the idea here is that it was explained in the previous verse that everything should be something that is pleasing to Krishna. We shouldn't be doing anything separately from Krishna. That is the definition of Maya. The definition of Maya is seeing something as being separate from Krishna. Everything is connected with Krishna. And therefore, whatever we have in this world, even if it is something enjoyable, Frankly, we have many enjoyable things in the Hare Krishna movement. Colorful festivals, wonderful music also, dancing. There are many Christian groups that do not allow dancing. You know this? They do not allow dancing. And then there are many religions that do not allow musical instruments also. Like in the Middle Ages, the Roman Catholic Church, they did not allow musical instruments, only the human voice. So all these things, when they're in relationship to Krishna, then they can be very enjoyable, but not enjoy separate from Krishna. Not enjoy separate from Krishna. Because as soon as we are trying to enjoy separately from Krishna, that is the definition of illusion and falsity. There is no enjoyment separate from Krishna. It doesn't exist. Even the greatest demon, whatever they are enjoying, it is really Krishna's energy. Just like Prahlad Maharaj said to his father, you are getting your power also from Krishna. You cannot get, there's no other source of power. There's no other source of enjoyment. So the Sitva Bhogan means to consciously, intentionally take all of our enjoyment in relation to Krishna. We are Nandamaya Vyasat. We are naturally developed, designed for enjoyment. We are not Mayavadis. We are not impersonalists. We do not say, stop enjoyment. No more enjoyment. Are you enjoying? Stop it. Stop it. No smiling. No laughing. You are in Maya if you are enjoying. Many people think like this. This impersonalistic idea. One devotee recently compiled some quotes from Prabhupada, you know, that you should be enjoying Krishna consciousness. And indeed, Krishna says, right, Raja Vijayam Raja Guyam Pavitram Idimuttamam Pratyaksha Vagamam Dharmam Su Sukham Kartam Avyayam. This is one of the tests. Is it Krishna consciousness? If you're not enjoying, then my dear friends, it is not Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness is full of happiness. I mean, there's also lamentation and ecstasy. That's another thing. Mother Yasoda crying in ecstasy when Krishna's in Mathura. I mean, that's something else. That may not look like ecstasy to the external public. But Krishna consciousness should be full of joy. If we are morose and we are depressed and we are angry, and we are not in Krishna consciousness. Beginning, middle, end of story. Because as soon as one is in Krishna consciousness, pratyaksha vagamam dharmam, it should be directly perceived, susukam, that one should be happy. So this hitva bhogan means I only take my happiness from Krishna directly. Again, like the Kachori bird? Yeah. Chakora bird. I always wanted to call them a Kachori bird. I'm only getting my happiness from the cloud. I'm not getting my happiness from any place else. So this is our key here, prema paryarcharan, to have love for Krishna, love for the guru, love for the devotees, to serve, to show that love and service for Krishna, guru, and the devotees, and to get my happiness only in relationship to this loving service for Krishna, guru, and the devotees. And if we think, well, that's not very much happiness, it's not a fact. That's the source of unlimited happiness. That's the source of unlimited happiness. And trying to get happiness separately from Krishna, that is very limited. So anyway, this is the essence of bhakti yoga. Want to know what is bhakti yoga? It is here in these four words. Premna paryacharan dvitva bhogan. That is the essence of our practice of bhakti. So questions, comments, corrections, additions? Yes. Well, really, the discussion of the Vanaprastha ashram is much more in tomorrow's verse. So that would be a better topic, really, for tomorrow. You know, what is the dharma of the Vanaprastha ashram? But the main dharma of the Vanaprastha ashram, as given in the Bhagavad Gita, is tapasya, is austerity. So that is, it is a fact that in the Vanaprastha ashram, one should take some additional austerity. Now, the main austerity in the Vanaprastha Ashram, and by the way, Vanaprastha Ashram, one can also go directly, you know, from the Brahmacharya Ashram to the Vanaprastha Ashram. So this stated in the seventh canto, the Brahmachari can go to the Grihastha Ashram, or it can skip the Grihastha Ashram and go directly to the Vanaprastha Ashram, or it can skip both the Grihastha and the Vanaprastha Ashrams and go directly to the Sannyas Ashram. So my own personal understanding is that many of the devotees in our movement that we say are in the Brahmachari Ashram are actually in the Vanaprastha Ashram. So if somebody is over 25 years old, if some man is over 25 years old, definitely over 30 years old, and has been in the Brahmachari Ashram for, you know, 5-10 years, and is a more senior devotee, probably they are not really in the Brahmachari Ashram, but they are in the Vanaprastha Ashram. And it would be very nice, I feel, would be a very nice thing for our lifetime celibate members to have this recognition that our, instead of just calling them senior Brahmacharis, to actually call them Vanaprasthas. Because the Brahmachari Ashram is compared to the Shudras. You know, the Brahmacharis are compared to the legs, the Grihasthas to the belly, the Vanaprasthas to the arms, and the Sannyasis to the head. And the Brahmacharis in the Brahmachari Ashram, you could be Brahmachari whole life. Like Bhaktisiddhanta was Nastiki Brahmachari, but he wasn't in the Brahmachari Ashram his whole life. So the Vanaprastha is very quite different from the Brahmachari Ashram in that there's a lot more independence. In the Brahmachari Ashram, you're the menial servant of the guru. If the guru doesn't say, come to breakfast and call you by name, you don't eat. Yes? Right? The guru have to say, okay, Krishna Das, you eat. Jiva Das, you eat. And if your name is Ram Das and he doesn't call Ram Das, then you fast. And whatever you collect, you give to the guru, you live in the guru's house. The Brahmachari Ashram is for children. For children and teenagers. And the Vanaprastha Ashram is for adults. So in the Vanaprastha Ashram, one travels to holy places, or one has some preaching project. When Srila Prabhupada was in the Vanaprastha Ashram, for example, he gave a lot of attention to publishing books. And Prabhupada writes those in the renounced orders. They should give learned discourses, and they should also produce transcendental literature. So we definitely have persons in our movement who are clearly in the Vanaprastha Ashram, although we call them Brahmacharis, people like Dravida or Drudhakarma Prabhu, or before Krishna Kshetra Maharaj took sannyas, he was definitely again in the Vanaprastha Ashram. So many like that. That the Vanaprastha Ashram is for most, it's a prep for the most men, it is a preparation for sannyas, although one could also end in the Vanaprastha Ashram. But the main dharma is indeed tapasya. So for one who is already in the Grihastha Ashram, one who's going from the Grihastha Ashram to the Vanaprastha Ashram, instead of from the Brahmachari Ashram to the Vanaprastha Ashram, the main tapasyas is first of all to give up sex life, which is going to be discussed more in tomorrow's verse. Not only gross, but also subtle. So that one's relationship between the husband and wife should no longer be on the sexual platform. And one also stops having one's occupation. We even understand this in modern society. If someone says they are retired, you retire from what? You retire from your job, yes? Everybody understands this. Oh, I'm retired now. That means you don't have a job. So the varna is only done in the Grihastha Ashram. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that only applies to the Grihastha Ashram. That is how you make your money. By the way, that is a good, on a side note, that is a good indication of whether or not somebody should enter the Grihastha Ashram, is whether or not somebody really wants to have a varna. If somebody really wants to act as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they need to enter the Grihastha Ashram. Because the Varnashram system is, if you're going to have a job, if you're going to have a business or an income, then you cannot just keep it for yourself. You don't just have an apartment and you just make money for yourself. But at the very least, you have to support a family. You have to be supporting wife, husband, and children and giving in charity to the society. The idea of a single person with an income is not Varnashram. So one of the tests for, say, the brahmachari? Can the brahmachari skip the grihastha ashram and go directly to the vanaprastha ashram? Do you have no interest in Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra activities? Are you only interested in the 64 angas of bhakti? So in the vanaprastha ashram, one is then only engaged in the 64 angas of bhakti. One is not engaged in any activity of the varna, and nor is one engaged in the normal grihastha thing. So that is the general austerity of the vanaprastha ashram, those two things. And one can do some additional austerity. Some vanaprasthas make a vow to live in a holy place, which is called kshetra sannyas, like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who he was still with his wife, but he was a kshetra sannyasi. And some vanaprasthas may travel to holy places, which includes, of course, our ISKCON temples. But again, Prabhupada says the main business of those in the renounced order is to give learned discourses and to write transcendental literature. But one may take some additional vow. That's fine. You know, I mean, any devotee is encouraged to sometimes take some additional vow of tapasya, but this is particularly applicable for those in the vanaprastha ashram. That's particularly their dharma. Like the dharma of those in the brahmachari ashram, what's the dharma of those in the brahmachari ashram? The main dharma is to what? Study. If you're in the brahmachari ashram, we're not just talking about if you're a brahmachari in terms of celibacy, but if you're in the brahmachari ashram, your main dharma is to study. What is the main dharma of those in the grihastha ashram? Charity. Charity. And there's two big kinds of charity that the grihasthas give: money and people. So the grihasthas are supposed to produce children. That is their charity to the society, good children. And the grihasthas are supposed to produce honest wealth. So the grihasthas give in charity two things: good population and honest wealth. Then the main dharma of the vanaprasthas is tapasya. And what is the main dharma of the sannyasis? Purification of existence. So complete purification. To die before dying. Letting go of all of the attachments. So those are the main dharmas of the different ashrams. So yes, that would be appropriate. But at least the tapasya of retiring from one's varna and retiring from particularly the sexual relationship, gross and subtle, of the grihastha ashram. Is that all right? And the brahmachari who goes directly to the vanaprastha ashram is saying, I will not take those things. That is closed. Because from the brahmachari ashram, you always have the option to go to the grihastha ashram. Yes? You understand? There's that door. But you go to the vanaprastha, you're saying, no, I'm not going that way. It's a choice. You're making a choice. You're saying, okay, I'm preparing for sannyas, and I'm not going to develop a varna. Because Prabhupada says in the brahmachari ashram, he says this in the second canto, that one gets training in the values of life, and one also gets training for a livelihood. So when the brahmachari goes to the vanaprastha ashram, then the brahmachari is saying, I'm not going to train for a livelihood. I'm stopping training for a livelihood. I'm not going to have a livelihood. And I'm not going to enter into the grihastha ashram, but I am now preparing for sannyas. Is that okay? But this is more for tomorrow, really. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.